Another struggle, another obstacle, another battle.
Ain't no telling where I'm about to go. Ain't no telling what I'm about to do. But I don't need you telling me what I need to do or who I need to be. Just let me be free.
This illegitimate Joe, he's like, oh no, Russia's gonna attack, Russia's gonna attack. And then he'll be like, no, we stopped it. We stopped it from happening. Russia never attacked. So look what illegitimate Joe Biden did. I did that. Good morning, jesters. Good morning, jestettes. Good morning, fellow jestarians. Good morning, Mr. Pickle. I love you. I miss you. I hope you're doing well, bud. I hope you're doing amazing. We're still kind of in a transition mode. We got some shit that went down last week that just wasn't very great. I broke up with my girl of 8 years, man. Woohoo! No, it's not woohoo. Because, man, well, you know what? It's none of your business. I mean, well, it's not your problem. Shit. I hope all y'all are doing phenomenal, man. Life is great. Life is phenomenal. Let's dive back into our conversation with Dr. Carl Hart, shall we? Drug use for grown-ups. Chasing liberty in the land of fear. Chapter number 8, Psychedelics, We Are One. If the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness don't include the right to experiment with your own consciousness, then the Declaration of Independence isn't worth the hemp it is written on. Terence McKenna. In recent years, psychedelic drugs have become chic. Now, even square, middle-class conventionalists openly boast about their experiences under the influence of their substances. The authenticity of their psychedelic adventures magnified if they take place in an exotic location and are led by a shaman or some other tradition-claiming leader. Psychedelics comprise drugs that include lysergic acid, diethylamide, better known as LSD, psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, dimethyltryptamine, also known as DMT, the psychoactive component of the ayahuasca brew, and other substances that are capable of producing profound alterations of perception and emotions. Not long ago, I was exercising in the Columbus gym when a middle-aged white military veteran recognized me and wanted to share his exploits. He didn't refer to these substances as psychedelics. He called them plant medicines. It was particularly important to him that I know he didn't get high and only use the plants to facilitate his spiritual journey. What's wrong with getting high? I asked with a deadpan look on my face. Like a deer caught in the headlights, the vet froze before babbling a defensive and incoherent thought. Mind you, I knew it had taken him a fair amount of courage to share this story with me, so I didn't want to come across as contemptuous. But that's exactly what I felt. Contempt. I wasn't angry with him, personally. It's just that I had grown increasingly annoyed with the mental gymnastics that some psychedelic users perform in order to distance themselves from other drug users. Irritation I felt toward a few proponents of psychedelics was now starting to color my view of an entire class of drugs. I knew this wasn't right. Excuse me. Many people have shared with me their propositive life-altering experiences after having used such drugs as ayahuasca, LSD, and psilocybin. Man, I've eaten mushrooms once, and it was a very mind expanding. I love the feeling because I had so many bright ideas, but of course I forgot about them. I didn't know what they were, and at the time I wasn't in the position to follow through with those ideas. Now, I would love to get me some mushrooms, man. Fuck yeah. Where was I? Many people have shared with me their positive life-altering experiences after having used such drugs as ayahuasca, LSD, and psilocybin. Some have said they use them to feel at one with the universe or to sense their connectedness with fellow humans. Others have said they use them to explore the meaning of their lives or to experience a kaleidoscope of magnificent colors and images. Frankly, they seem to be better people as a result. They are conscious of others' well-being and express a desire to being about a more just world. For this, I am grateful. Yet I repeatedly encounter subtle cues of drug exceptionalism, a belief that psychedelics were somehow a superior class of drug. This disturbed me. Fortunately, a chance meeting at a 2017 Christmas Eve party helped change my thinking about psychedelics. There, I met filmmaker Amir Barlev, who had recently completed his exquisite documentary, Long Strange Trip, about a rock band, The Grateful Dead. At the time, I knew very little about the Dead and cared even less about their music. I knew the group had a rabid fan base, deadheads, who followed them around the country wherever they toured. But, without much thought, I had pigeonholed deadheads as aging hippies who refused to grow up, and I had neglected to consider the possibility that their use of psychedelics might have been a way for them to explore freedom, a way for them to experience more meaningful life. I know, right? I appreciate you, buddy. Thus, as I learned more about the band and its journey, it wasn't difficult for me to see why LSD and other psychedelics were key ingredients of the Dead experience. For instance, I doubt people would enjoy the Dead's music as much as they do without an aid of psychedelics. Amir is a thoughtful, sincere, and unassuming man. He doesn't engage in conversations merely to toot his own horn. He listens attentively and patiently and makes others want to do the same in his presence. As Amir spoke more about his film, my respect for the Dead, especially for Jerry Garcia, increased. Garcia was viewed by many as the band's leader, but he steadfastly rejected this title up to his death in 1995. He was a firm believer in egalitarian principles and viewed each band member as an equal. Man, my nose is running. Amir caught me by surprise when he said that my position on adult drug use, specifically that it's an unalienable right, was very much in line with Garcia's view. Say what? I asked incredulously as Amir made his case. I found it difficult to wrap my head around the notion that a psychedelic icon and I might share similar views on drugs. The current popular psychedelic movement seems to be dominated by people who justify their use of these drugs by couching it in medical and spiritual jargon. With some justification over the past 15 years or so, a growing number of studies have demonstrated that psychedelics such as ketamine and psilocybin produce a range of therapeutically beneficial outcomes, including reducing depressive mood states, and provoking spiritually meaningful, personally transformative experiences. The media has warmly embraced these findings and generated a stream of positive buzz in the popular press. Also, a growing number of popular books and public lectures tout the benefits of psychedelic use. Michael Pollan, in How to Change Your Mind, persuasively makes the case that psychedelics such as LSD and psilocybin can be personally transformative. They can be. A growing amount of scientific data backs him up. In her book, A Really Good Day, Ayelet Waldman chronicles her month-long experience of taking small, sub-perceptual doses of LSD to treat her mood disorder. Waldman, like others, was inspired to use microdoses of LSD after having read James Fadiman's The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. Despite the fact that there is virtually no solid evidence supporting microdoses of psychedelics to treat ailments or improve performance, the research hasn't been done. Microdosing has become the latest fad. Together, these developments have contributed to the removal of the stigma associated with using these substances, so long as the reason for use is not to get high. If your aim is to seek relief from an emotional or physical ailment, or to achieve spiritual transcendence, or to find your God, cool. But if you merely want to have a good time, not cool.
I want to mention that, remember, we're going to get to 1,000 subscribers by June. So smash that subscribe button and share, man.
This arbitrary distinction makes no sense. Oftentimes, the alleviation of pain, whether it's psychologically or anatomically based, contribute to feelings of intense well-being and happiness. That is, to a sense of having a good time. Disentangling these deeply personal and idiosyncratic constructs is a difficult, if not impossible, task. Similarly, the sacred experiences that positively affect one's self-perception, worldview, goals, and ability to transcend one's difficulties are hard to separate from one's feelings of pleasure or happiness. What's more, psychedelic drugs aren't unique in their ability to produce these responses. I certainly have experienced all those effects after taking heroin or cocaine or MDMA or any number of the drugs that I discuss in this book. Heroin and cocaine aren't classified as psychedelics. However, MDMA, which is, in fact, structurally an amphetamine, is often classified as a psychedelic. Following a single administration of a large dose, greater than 250 milligrams, it's absolutely possible to experience transient, prominent, visual, perceptual changes. Damn, I can't read today. Sometimes referred to as trails, a series of discrete images following moving objects. But most people who take MDMA aren't seeking the visual alterations and will never experience such effects because the typical doses used range from about 75 to 125 milligrams. Within this dose range, the magnanimous, euphoric, and empathy-enhancing effects that most of us seek from MDMA are far more likely to occur. Thus, if it were up to me, and it's not, I wouldn't label MDMA as a psychedelic. It's an amphetamine, period. Nonetheless, the discussion raises multiple broader issues about why specific drugs are categorized as psychedelics and others are not. Why have some psychedelics but not others managed to shed ridiculous stereotypes about their effects and users and thereby increase their popular acceptance and respectability. Methamphetamine, a chemical cousin of MDMA, is never referred to as a psychedelic. Why not? At large enough doses, it too can produce visual hallucinations. Plus, it has contributed to some of my most transcendent moments and has helped me solidify a few of my most important relationships. The majority of my methamphetamine experiences rival those I've had on MDMA and were a lot more meaningful than those I've had under the influence of so-called psychedelics. Admittedly, thus far, I have taken only a few psychedelics, 4-acetoxy-DMT, 2-CB, ketamine, and psilocybin. In addition, because of my limited experience with these substances, I have always taken doses in the low end of the spectrum, as I noted in Chapter 3. The amount of drug taken is one of the most crucial factors in determining the resulting effects. It's possible that I might have found psychedelics more preferable had I pushed the dose. Relatedly, the setting under which drug use occurs can exert powerful influences on how the individual experiences the effects. Many people take psychedelics in the presence of a guide or a shaman, someone who ostensibly serves as a safety monitor as well as an experienced interpreter. Some people find this comforting. I find it creepy and have never done so myself. For those reasons, perhaps, it's not fair to draw a comparison between my methamphetamine and my psychedelic experience. Regardless, the point I'm trying to make is that the way drugs are categorized is often discretionary and dependent upon whomever is doing the classifying. Most people, especially well-educated professionals, classify drugs in the manner that best serves their own purposes. For example, a drug such as MDMA is categorized as a psychedelic by respectable middle-class white folks because they use and enjoy it. Methamphetamine, however, is not included among the psychedelics because, middle-class drug elitists revile it. The perception in the world of former Oklahoma Governor Frank Keating is that it's a white trash drug. Can you imagine if methamphetamine was labeled as a psychedelic? Respectable people would balk at this notation, fearing that the drug would ruin the rehabilitated reputation of their beloved psychedelics. By extension, no doubt, psychedelic users would worry that their own good names would be besmirched as well. Let's set it off there, or leave it off there. And then, let me see, where was I? Okay, here we go. Mark my spot. And now, man, this is a crazy fucking day, man. Shit is just panning out quite different than I had planned. But you see, I saw this coming a long time ago. I was just trying to ride it out and hoping it wouldn't happen, but it did. You know why, though? I know why it happened. Because if someone is never wrong, that means they never change. They never grow. I mean, that means this woman is still like she was 20 fucking years ago because she's never fucking wrong. And now, her mother's gas bill is in my name, so they're going to run that the fuck up, and I'm going to be fucked with that, unless I shut it off now. But that would be a dickhead move, to shut off this old lady's gas. All right? But maybe I should, because, shit, that's my fucking credit that she's just not going to give two fucks about, because she's a goddamn selfish... you know what? Wait, let's just stop. Let's just stop. Because it's, it's not nice to not be nice. So let's be nice. And let's dive into the UFC, shall we? Let's see what these mother truckers are trying to sell us today.
Hey, go to anchor.fm/SWTJ. Sessions with the Jester, SWTJ. And leave a message. That's anchor.fm/SWTJ. Leave a message. Tell me what you think about my views. That would be some good shit. Word.
The window to resolve the Russia-Ukraine tensions diplomatically, it's still open.
The White House says President Joe Biden is willing to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in principle as long as Russia doesn't move militarily on Ukraine, something the White House says could happen at any moment. But this morning, the Kremlin cast doubt of the possibility of top-level talks.
For more, we're joined by NPR's Frank Langfitt in Kyiv. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, good morning, Layla.
So, Frank, break it down for us.
More Russia.
Is this Biden-Putin summit going to happen?
It's not quite clear. You know, French President Emmanuel Macron is working the phones not only with the U.S. and Russia, but also with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, as well as the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, to try to set up a meeting to broker a ceasefire. Well, anything that doesn't involve else, but just as A was saying, you know.
Sorry about that, guys. I hit the wrong button. But let me. Let me run something by you. Illegitimate Joe Biden, his numbers are in the shitter. Nobody, because he wasn't voted in. He was never voted in. He was installed like a goddamn toilet. So of course his approval numbers are never going to be high. But now he's trying to start beating his war drums, trying to get all this shit. Russia's going to do this. Russia's going to do that. As we've heard, Russia's economy is the size of Texas. I mean, they aren't a big fucking huge cut. Well, geographically they're huge, but not financially. They're not big financially. So, what I'm thinking this could be is illegitimate Joe. He's like, oh no, Russia's gonna attack. Russia's gonna attack, and then he'll be like, no, we stopped it. We stopped it from happening. Russia never attacked. So look what illegitimate Joe Biden did. I did that. Bullshit. It's all fucking lies. They created the problem, and then they solved the problem, and then they're the fucking hero. That's just how they fucking do it, man. But you just gotta realize that, no, this is all a fucking lie. This whole Russia and Ukraine, who cares about what the fuck's going on in Canada? What the fuck's going on with Hillary Clinton, man? That's the shit that's holding my goddamn concern. What about now the Freedom Convoy to D.C.? That's going on. That's fucking happening. We're going to see when they get there. I mean, this is just all one big fucking game that illegitimate Joe Biden is playing.
Kremlin spokesman came out this morning saying it's premature to prepare for a summit and the dialogue should continue between foreign ministries and political advisors.
So how are reports of this possible meeting being received in Ukraine?
Well, anything that doesn't involve an invasion is always welcome here.
Right.
And so is Ukrainians in social media. I'd say there was qualified relief, but I would also say for the moment, because we're sort of on these 24-hour cycles. But they're also wondering, hey, if there are these talks, why aren't we going to be a part of these talks? And you've got to understand from Ukraine's point of view, you know, they're always concerned that these bigger powers will make some decision that affects them and kind of cut them out. So if there were a summit to actually happen, there also would be plans for a much wider meeting, which, you know, involving the future of security in Europe so that the Ukrainians would not feel left out.
So since Thursday, there's been increased violence in the area known as the Donbas in the country's far east, including two Russian separatist enclaves. What's going on there now?
Yeah, Ukrainian government says forces in the area that's occupied by these Russian-backed separatists continued heavy artillery today. And analysts view this violence, Layla, in a number of different ways. One, it could be a prelude to a possible attack.
It's
but
not.
It's also a way to continue to raise pressure on Ukraine and the West for negotiations.
You know what? You know what I bet it is?
I want to point out here that...
You know what I bet it is? Biden is telling them, is giving them money, is paying them to do this. To keep up... making it look like, Oh no, Russia. See, it's all optics. It's all optics. What does it look like? Russian backed separatists in Ukraine are launching missiles when Russia's not doing a goddamn thing. Of course, because Russia's not going to fucking invade, because it would be goddamn suicide. It would be a stupid fucking idea. But Biden, he's, like I said, he's beating the war drums, and then he's going to say, oh, look, I stopped it from happening. We never went to the war with Russia because of me. Fuck you. You're an idiot. I don't, you're just a piece of shit, illegitimate Joe.
Russia has said it does not plan to invade, even though it has enormous number of forces along the Ukrainian border. And most Ukrainians don't think Russia will invade either. They think it would be catastrophic, not only for Ukraine, but also for President Putin and Russia.
Exactly.
And instead, they see this kind of pressure and what's happening in the East and all of these troops as a way to continue to damage the country and pressure to align with Russia instead of the West, which the West is really where most people here see their nation's future.
I've got to ask you before I let you go about this reported kill list. The U.S. wrote to the U.N. human rights chief in Geneva warning that the Russians have created a hit list of people in Ukraine to detain or kill if they invade. What more do we know about that?
Well, number one, it's obviously all made up by some... See, this is just... It's all bullshit because the entire U.S. government is bullshit because all they do is fucking lie. They create a problem, they solve the problem, and then look, they're the fucking heroes. That's the game they play. So I don't fucking believe a goddamn word they're saying, man.
Yeah, this was published by the New York Times and also linked to with the Washington Post, and it says, among other things,
two corrupt fucking information news that agencies. Indicates Russian Good call,
forces
buddy.
Are creating lists of identified Ukrainians to be killed or sent to camps following a military occupation. We should say we haven't seen any evidence of this. We haven't confirmed the letter. The Kremlin calls it an absolute lie, but I have heard about this actually when I arrived here more than a week ago from a very well-placed Western source. So that's where we stand.
Liars, liars, they're nothing but a bunch of liars.
Our brand new sponsor, Pot V Life Dispensaries at potvlife.us. Check them out, man. They got vapes, they have edibles, they have cannabis beer, they have moon rocks, they have extracts, they just have a whole selection of good shit, man. Go check out potvlife.us. Tell them the jester sent you. Fuck yeah.
Closing arguments are happening today in the federal hate crimes trial of the three white men convicted of murdering Ahmaud Arbery.
The 25-year-old black man was jogging through a coastal Georgia neighborhood 2 years ago when the men chased him down and killed him. The trio was sentenced to life in prison on the state murder conviction, but now face federal civil rights charges.
That's what I'm talking about. If they're going to spend the rest of their fucking lives in prison, why are they going to court again? It's a waste of time and money. They're trying to just spoil who gets that money, who gets the taxpayer money for housing these three fucking racist or bigoted fucks. I mean, I don't it's fucking ridiculous, man. Why I don't understand why they're wasting the money. Well, why that's a lie. I do understand. It's because they want to divide. They want to see who gets the money. They want to see what prison he goes to. And if there's federal hate crime charges, maybe it'll add... I don't fucking know. I mean, this makes no goddamn sense in my head. Maybe I'm just a fucking idiot. Well, I am a fucking pothead. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do, man?
To discuss... Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Layla.
So, Debbie, would you start by just reminding us who the defendants are and what this federal trial is about?
Well, father and son, Greg and Travis McMichael and William Roddy Bryan, are all charged with attempted kidnapping and, as we said, violating Arbery's civil rights, specifically using force to interfere with his right to use a public street. Federal prosecutors say the defendants targeted Arbery because he was black. They chased him with pickups until he was cornered, and then Travis McMichael shot him to death at close range with a pump-action shotgun. Now, the facts of the murder are not in dispute. The question here is motive. Why these men went in pursuit of Ahmaud Arbery as he ran through their neighborhood outside of Brunswick, Georgia. Prosecutors say it's because they assume the only reason a black man might be running down their street was to flee after committing a crime. It's an assumption prosecutors say they would not have made had a white man been out for a run.
So testimony wrapped up on Friday, and you mentioned a few things, but tell us more about the government's case and the evidence it laid out to try and prove that these three men were motivated by racism when they murdered Arbery.
Well, in testimony last week, they pretty much used the men's own words to show that long before they killed Ahmaud Arbery.
Obviously, these fucks are bigoted. They're going to spend the rest of their lives in prison. Why is this trial even a fucking thing? I mean, they're in prison for the rest of their fucking lives for killing this kid. Which they should be. So why is this trial going on? It's fucking ridiculous. It's a waste of time and money, and they don't care about either of them, I guess.
They held racist, offensive, and demeaning views of black people. And in the case of the McMichaels in particular, supported violence against African Americans and vigilante justice. That came from cell phone messages, social media posts, as well as conversations. For instance, a white woman who served under Travis McMichael in the Coast Guard testified on Friday that he had made racist and vulgar sexual comments to her after he learned that she had once dated a black man. In jailhouse tape recordings, Greg McMichael was heard in a phone conversation referring to Arbery's killing and saying, quote, "No good deed goes unpunished." There was also evidence that the third defendant, Roddy Bryan, had used racial slurs.
They deserve to be in prison.
About the Martin Luther
Why are we having this
holiday?
Fucking trial?
What about the defense?
You know, none of the defendants testified.
There's no fucking point for this. They're going to be in prison for the rest of their goddamn lives anyway.
The closing arguments today, after the prosecution rested its case on Friday, no witnesses were called by lawyers for either Travis McMichael or Roddy Bryan. And Greg McMichael's attorney only put on a very brief testimony from one of their neighbors. During opening statements, defense attorneys had denounced their racist views of their clients, but said there's no evidence that these men chased Ahmaud Arbery solely because he was black. They say they went after him because he was the guy that they had seen on surveillance video going into a home construction site without permission at night on several occasions. So the jury could be weighing those two opposing views today, and we'll see what happens.
So it sounds like the jury could begin deliberations as early as today.
Yeah, after the closings, the judge will likely charge the jury and they could get started.
NPR's Debbie Elliott, thank you so much for your reporting.
You're welcome.
Hey there, fellow Jesterians. Let me tell you about a sponsor of ours that is now part of the Jester family. Shine On Botanicals is one of the purest CBD distillate on the market. We have tinctures, roll-ons, vapes, gummies. We also have pet tinctures. Email thepromotingjester @gmail.com. Put shine on the subject line and list what you would like to purchase. By the end of the week, you will receive an invoice. Easy peasy. Now let's get back to the UFC.
As the U.S. continues to see declines in COVID cases and hospitalizations, new mask guidance is expected soon from the CDC, perhaps as soon as this week.
Oh, baby, I can't wait. Tell me what I need to do. Govern me harder, Daddy.
Fuck this bullshit. Joining us to talk about all this. Hey, Allison.
Good morning, Layla.
So I have to say, it was pretty recent that the CDC advised everyone to wear N95 masks, and now it's considering loosening mask recommendations. So what's changed?
Yeah, well, cases are way down. There's been about a 75% decline since the start of February.
Like,
and
that matters.
More
what's changed
the
is the fucking that
it's
the midterms are coming
down
out
to about 40%. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says this is a key metric. So as these trends continue, hopefully in the right direction, the agency is reevaluating.
We want to give people a break from things like mask wearing when these metrics
no,
are
you
better.
Don't. You could give
and then
two
have
shits.
The ability
you...
to reach for them again should things
The midterms
worsen.
Are coming
Many
up. That's why all these shits are dropping.
Lifted
and fucking
requirements, but
everybody knows
see,
it.
It's being planted
not everybody, but they're
COVID
starting to learn that nobody fucking cares about
so
your goddamn mandates. Nobody wants to be told what
outbreak.
The fuck to do because
okay,
we are no longer...
Okay, what about lifting mask mandates in schools?
We live in America, man.
Dr. Walensky has said for now the CDC is sticking with the recommendation to keep masks on in schools. Though some states have already lifted or set dates to lift requirements, and there really are differing opinions among infectious disease experts. Some say there's not much benefit of keeping kids masked if the
wider
community is
not. There isn't. There's zero benefit.
Kids,
this disease doesn't even affect fucking kids.
Others say with many children unvaccinated, keep the masks on, given the virus is still circulating. In California, officials say they will reevaluate school masking.
Well, California's a fucking lost cause anyway. Fuck California.
At the end of this month.
No offense to California.
So I want to pivot, Allison. I want to ask about some new studies out that suggest a lot of Americans neglected preventative health care during the pandemic. Everything from cholesterol checks to cancer screenings. Does that mean more people are sicker with non-COVID illnesses now?
Well, the pandemic has had a pretty chilling effect on prevention measures, such as cancer screenings, as you say. Take mammograms. Fewer women have had them. And now when breast cancers are detected, they're more likely to be detected at a later stage. A new study from UC San Diego found prior to the pandemic, 64% of breast cancer patients were diagnosed at stage one early on, but that dropped to about half. Dr. Connie Lehman is director of the breast imaging at Massachusetts General Hospital. She says this trend is very concerning.
The very good news about breast cancer is when we detect it early, we cure it, which is why we have so many women that are breast cancer survivors. However, when we diagnose breast cancer late, it's a very different story. The treatment is much more aggressive, and unfortunately, the percentage of women that will die goes up dramatically when the disease is diagnosed at a late stage.
So if you are due for a mammogram, schedule it. The American Cancer Society recommends annual screenings for women in their mid-40s to mid-50s, then the option of every other year after that. And they say for people 45 and up, think about scheduling a colonoscopy, the best way to detect early-stage cancer.
NPR's Allison Aubrey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Layla.
That was the UFC for February 21st. Deuce, 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 deuce. I'm just a pothead, dude. Let's talk about these mother trucking mother truckers, man. Cancer. Again, we'll Russia and Ukraine. This is the 22nd. This is the 23rd day that we're talking about Russia and Ukraine. And again, they created the problem, they create the solution, problem solved. That's how the government works. That's how illegitimate Joe Biden is dealing with Russia. Russia wasn't going to invade until, they are still going to invade. But now it's made me think that there's not going to be a false flag because he doesn't want to go to war. Because that would make his goddamn numbers drop even more. I mean, it's fucking ridiculous that he's even doing this over there. I mean, it has nothing to do with the U.S. Why are we not defending the goddamn Canadian citizens against their tyrannical leader, Justin Trudeau? Justin Trudeau, motherfucker. Ha, 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 ha. Anyway, that was pretty lame. I mean, they're being fucking trampled by horses, and they're peaceful, and they're not doing anything wrong. But I guess bouncy houses and dance parties are illegal, like in Footloose. You cannot have fun in Canada. Oh, these motherfuckers. But no, because like I said, Joe Biden created this issue over in between Russia and Ukraine just so he can come up with a solution. And we don't go to war. Oh, thank you, Joe Biden. We didn't go to war because of Joe Biden. Fuck you. I mean, it's all just a big goddamn game, and it's all optics. Nothing's going to fucking happen. He just wants to up his numbers. And he thinks he's going to do that by problem solution fixing. You know, it's his problem. He has a solution. Excuse me. I forget the name of the... what it's called, but, you know, he created the problem, so he's going to create the solution. Problem solved, his numbers go up. I mean, that's just how it is. He's like a fucking child, man. Well, he's treating us like children, like we don't fucking see this. It's ridiculous and stupid on his part. But what are you going to do? We'll just keep on laughing at illegitimate Joe Biden, who was installed like a goddamn toilet. Because as this is coming out about Hillary Clinton and about all the shit that she's been doing, I guarantee you Trump won that goddamn election. Fair and square. But Joe Biden was installed like a goddamn toilet. He is a goddamn toilet. He's a piece of shit who floats in a goddamn toilet. I can't expand on that anymore because it's ridiculous, man. That we let this fucking bullshit happen. We just let it happen. And we didn't question it. Because all these goddamn liberal judges are in the pot. This corruption, this whole fucking system is corrupt. And it runs so goddamn deep that it's fucking scary as fuck, yo. I don't know what the fuck's gonna happen.
If you like the show and want to support us directly, check us out on Venmo at @the_jester. Peace.
Second story was about the federal trial for the bastards who killed that Ahmaud Arbery. His last name was, I forget his Ahmaud. Was it Ahmaud Arbery? I don't know. His last name was Arbery. But they're going to spend the rest of their fucking lives in prison anyway. So what is the point? Tell me the point. A legitimate point of this trial that they're holding. It's to make money. It's just money. Give me money. Give me money. And fuck you, pay me. It's, you know, it's fucking ridiculous, man. And I... what the hell? But what are you going to do? The last story was about how COVID mandates are falling and now they're worried about people dying of cancer and it's because of... Well, guess what, buddies? If you hadn't created this goddamn scamdemic to begin with, well, you see, that's why they don't care about people. They only care about themselves and their bank accounts and what's going to make us richer. Let's kill a bunch of people and then kill some more and then we'll have more money for us because money is good. Fuck you. I fucking hate ridiculous people, man. Idiots, man. You just see, freedom, your freedom comes with an obligation to pay attention, to understand what's going on so you don't lose your fucking freedoms. Don't be an idiot and just let shit happen. Well, I couldn't. No, fuck, you could do something about it, man. Pay attention. Be part of this goddamn, of your goddamn world. Be part of the community. Don't just sit on your goddamn phone watching stupid-ass videos. Because what goes into your brain, what you feed your body is what you are. It's what you fucking are. And if you're watching stupid videos, you're just a stupid fucking person. That's just how it is. Sorry. But let's check in on Mr. Ben, shall we? Let's see what these... That's... Jesus. Let's check in with Mr. Ben. Let's see what space weather is going to be for February 21st. Deuce, deuce. Morning, Mr. Ben.
Good morning, folks. We've got incoming sunspots, exoplanet science, and two studies related to Earth's ongoing magnetic pole shift. We'll preview a website video we aim to get out later today as well, and we're starting with our star at spaceweathernews.com. We find the last 24 hours on the sun were pretty quiet. Coronal holes and filaments and small bright spots all over the place. But in terms of eruptive potential, all the focus is on those filaments and the incoming sunspots on the north. They may have more company coming, or they may be lone remnants of their former selves. That's what we'll find out this week. Let's jump to the science news here. And there is a controversy brewing for those planets alleged to have iron rain. They're so hot. Turns out, a different camp is saying, not so fast, NASA. Their previous findings may have been a misinterpretation of the chemistry at the cloud tops. this was WASP-76b, but would also apply to WASP-79b as well. Up next, a 99% fantastic work detailing how Earth's magnetic field is changing the planet. They describe the rapid shift of the poles and the weakening of the overall field as triggering the appearance of discrete aurora of mid-latitude Russia over the last decade. And they make only one error. They describe the lower electron flux in the South Atlantic anomaly as being due to its shrinking, when that's not happened at all. It is still growing, obviously, but what shrank is the solar activity from cycle 23 to 24. Interesting to note, the solar forcing has a greater influence on penetrating electric fields at low latitude, but the ongoing pole shift is changing the positions of the auroras despite the drop in solar activity. Lastly, gotta hit this article. Very impressive they managed to get through the entire explanation of increased particle bombardment and unexpected ULF wave activity without blaming the weakening magnetic field of Earth. A completely mysterious and anomalous event, and to be honest, it's a fantastic bit of science just to catch it, and then to analyze it at such a high level here, just as long as you know why it was possible. Website members at suspiciousobservers.org. We'll be trying to get you this deeper look episode today. It is on this chart where we're going over the solar micronova radiation timeline and what we should expect before, during, and after the event. We greatly appreciate your support. We've got wind maps and shots of our star to close. Subscribe and we'll do this all again tomorrow. Right here, but right now, it's 5 a.m. in the new Valley of the Sun. Eyes open. No fear. Be safe, everyone.
Good shit, Mr. Ben. Excellent episode. Thank you very much, sir. Remember to subscribe to Suspicious Observers on YouTube. Give full impact those videos and stay up to date as to what's popping off cosmologically. Fudge, yeah!
Hey, fellow jesters, I wanted to let you know that Sessions with the Jester t-shirts are finally available. They're $35, free shipping in the lower 48. Email thepromotingjester@gmail.com and tell them the sizes you want. They'll send you an invoice for a completely secure payment. Let's get back to the show.
Quote of the day. Oh yeah.
Every day is a new beginning. Take a deep breath, smile, and start again. You have a chance to create your future. You have the power to do whatever the fuck you want, man. Take that power and embrace it. And now I see where I was being held back because I was too fucking comfortable. You know what? Fuck it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because every goddamn day is a new fucking beginning. So embrace it. Live life.
Yay!
So let's ramp up. Let's get the words out there and let's spread the Jester Revolution, baby! If you ain't laughing, you ain't living! Yeah! Be a better version of yourself. Smoke the weed every day. And make shit happen. Fuck yeah.